So when I was 2 years old, I was injured in a car fire. I was in the car along with my sister, Amanda, and she was also two. So I had just turned two and she was about to be three. And my mum left us in the car to go into the shop and get milk. We were just on our way home from town and our car went on fire. No one really knows why that accident happened. Some sort of electrical fault with the car is the theory that there is. But because it was, you know, 1988, cars were a lot more flammable than what they are now. And it you know, was totally engulfed in flames within a couple of minutes. I had moved myself into the front of the car and I was pulled out of the car by a man who was passing by called Oliver Quinn. And Amanda was in the back of the car. And Oliver couldn't reach her to get her out of the car, so Amanda died that day. Dear Scars, I have rewritten this letter many times. It started out as bitter pain. Pain I hadn't known I'd held. Childhood hurt scrawled in "I hate you" over and over again. Three words but a thousand tears. Each time I wrote it, it got bigger on the page. How long had I held it? The rage we're taught to bury. How do we tell ourselves the deepest truths about how much we dislike this body we walk around in? The one true place we inhabit, so detested and scorned. How heavy it felt, pouring that scorn onto paper, like a purging of pain I hadn't dared to utter, an undoing of something I hadn't realised I had done.
So the family's car is parked up in front of the shops. Mel and her sister Amanda are waiting for their mum as she pops in to buy some milk. A fire breaks out, the car is engulfed in flames, and a passerby called Oliver Quinn sees the fire. He breaks into the car, pulls out Mel, but can't reach her sister in time.
He is such a hero because, you know, he did the opposite of what made sense to do. Like, if a car's on fire, it could explode. For him to run towards that level of danger instead of away from it, he really is a hero. And if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here at all.
When Mel told me about Oliver Quinn, the passerby, the man who pulled her from the car and went back for her sister Amanda, I wanted to know more about him.
Oliver always said he didn't want to ever impose on my life or make anything difficult. And so he always kept a sort of graceful distance. You know, he would have been around at times. He's met my children. My second son, Leo, is Leo Oliver. You know, he's named after him, you know, and he's met the boys. And he's just always been there quietly on the sidelines. He's very much the definition of a reluctant hero. Obviously, I wouldn't be here only for him. And we're all so acutely aware of that fact.
Oliver Quinn is Mel's hero. You can't even begin to imagine what he did that day. The fire left Mel extensively burnt and she needed lots of time in hospital to recover. And at the age of two, what does Mel remember?
I do have a lot of sensory memories and my body remembers what happened, but I don't remember, you know, a lot of stories or details from that initial time. I think that especially because I was so young and so small as well, it was a very serious situation that I was in. And that journey to the hospital, while I don't remember it, I have met Albert, the paramedic who drove me to Belfast. When I was speaking to him, he said that even at the end of his career, the journey to Belfast with me was the fastest he has had to drive in his job. The most poignant thing that he has ever told me, you know, was that, you know, he also brought my sister's body to the hospital. And he said that, you know, whenever they got the call in that I needed brought to Belfast, it was almost like they had done such a hard job to bring my sister's body to the hospital, and he was like, right, we're not going to do that again. So, you know, we want to do everything we can now that the second child is, you know, delivered safely. And they did. My worst of my injuries are my, you know, upper body, so my face and my hands. I lost my hair and of other burns, of burning my leg. But yeah, I was extensively injured. I know I was in hospital for several months initially following that. And then the years that came after were, you know, spent to reconstruct my face and my hands, where the majority of my injuries are. People see me now and think, you know, I just walked out of that car fire looking like this. This is a product of a lot of work. You know, my hands in particular, I mean, I have very little tiny fingers initially when I was first injured. Like, I didn't have fingers at all. They were almost like fused together. My face as well needed a lot of surgery. Functional things like my eyes needed to close properly was a big thing. If your eyes don't close properly, you can lose your sight if your eyes dry out too much, you know. So there was that sort of thing that needed to be done. And then obviously the sort of restoration of my features to make them look better, to make them more, you know, symmetrical, and fix my skin and give me skin grafts to increase functionality and that sort of thing. So it has taken a lot of work to look how I do now. And I am very blessed. I've had such a wonderful surgeon, Dr. Roy Miller, who I still am in contact with. It's very hard to explain that relationship and the sort of bond that you have with somebody who's walked that particular road with you. And meeting the people that have treated me, which I have done randomly, it's serendipity, you know, you sort of meet these people. Like, I met Albert, the paramedic who drove me to Belfast, on the side of the road one day because my eldest son loved like anything with a siren. And I saw this ambulance and it was parked up, and I stopped to let Will look at the ambulance. And I said to the paramedics, I was like, do you mind if we look at your ambulance? Because my son is obsessed with sirens and whatever. And he said, I know you. and like, that's how I met him.
As an adult, more of her story has been pieced together for Mel. She's since met the nurse who was there when it was all happening. The nurse is the person who takes Mel, badly injured, off her mum. The next part of the story is absolutely devastating.
She said, I will never forget your mother's face when she handed you to me, you know, so that she could go in and look for your other sister. And it is heartbreaking to think of what they went through. And, you know, my dad, he was at home. And he got brought up then to the hospital. He said that all that you could hear before you even got in the building was me. It is just almost too much to even contemplate what my parents went through. And then the months that followed, you know, having to be there for me and see what I was going through and to try and grieve and everything else for my sister. It's a huge task for them to stay strong for me. And I will never forget the strength that they had, because it is my parents who have made me who I am. And, you know, I remember there was lots of local newspaper clippings about our accident and me and, you know, the aftermath of all of that. And, you know, there's one, it says, we're not ashamed of her. We're not going to hide her away. You know, this is my parents, and that kind of sums them up. You know, they were very much, well, this is who she is. And if you've got a problem with it, go home and sort your own head out, because it's not her fault. That's the attitude they taught me to have. And it was difficult. It would be easier not to. It would have been easier not to go out. And it would, especially like play parks and places with children, it would have been easier just to stay away from that. You know, my mum said to me once, she said she loved going out in our, so I was brought up in a little village called Kesh. And she said, you know, I loved going into Kesh because everybody already knew. So nobody asked any questions, you know, and she could just go out and go to the shop and get things, and people would have a normal conversation like, how are you? It's a nice day. Do you know, without having to ask questions about me, because they already knew, you know, this wee child in the buggy, that I looked like that because of the accident. And she said she enjoyed the freedom of that. And I can understand that as I've got older. I did not know how much it had burned me until I felt the heat of it searing onto the page. I had never told you, but now I had. I had struck you back with my rage, my childhood visceral rage that brave little girls should know how to contain. It felt good, my big words, finally free, flowing, red on white paper. I hate you. I don't want you. You are ugly.
when did you realise that you were different?
I always knew I was different because I don't remember the before. My mum told me not that long ago that not long after she first brought me home from the hospital, she let me see myself in a mirror and I was 2. And she said to her just like, you know, she's kind of, oh, well, grand. you know, at that time, I was very young and I don't remember this, obviously, but that made me laugh because I very much had a charge forward attitude to it as a child. I think I still have that. You know, I had a real stubborn determination to just, we're moving forward and keep going. But I think probably for me, really noticing it was school, because it's the first time that you're with a bunch of other children and you sort of look at them and you look at yourself and you say, oh, I am different. So I think that's when it became most apparent to me. I was very determined at school too. Like, I met a teacher of mine. She said that I had come to the open day for P1 and she said, you wanted to paint a picture. And she said, I was really nervous about giving you a paintbrush to paint a picture in case you couldn't do it. Because, you know, my hands are so different to everyone else's hands. I've had all of my fingers amputated, so they're tiny. And she said that she was really worried that she didn't want to set me up to fail. And she said, you went on to paint the best picture of the day. And so this is me. This is a me that turned up to primary school, you know, was very much like, well, why not? Well, why can't I? You know, I was very determined to be like everybody else. And school, with the best intentions, school kind of nearly protected me too much. You know, there was a time I wasn't allowed to play football in case I got hurt, you know, so I would stand on the sidelines and watch everybody else play. And, you know, what did that teach the other kids? Oh, she's there because she's different. But they obviously got tired listening to me, or somebody got tired listening to me, my mum, the teachers, I don't know. But I eventually was allowed to play. I was allowed to play football. I remember my first day playing football, and the kids, bless them, they did what children do when they think you don't know how to play football. They put me in goal. And this ball came towards me and I saved a goal. And my whole team, they ran towards me, like, honestly, you'd think it was like World Cup. They ran towards me and were all around me and were so excited because I'd saved this goal. I can't talk about this without getting tears in my eyes, because that moment for me was the first time I ever felt like I fitted in, like I belonged somewhere, like I wasn't on the sides anymore. And it has been such a difficult journey to get to a point where, like, I felt like I belonged.
And that belonging Mel talks about can mean so much when you felt so different for so long.
There are days when I get up in the morning and I do my makeup and I do my hair and I don't see my burns. I see, is my eyeliner on right? And I go out the door and I don't, it's almost like I forget that I'm burned, right? So like, I'm in this lovely little, you know, bubble of, I'm just me. I did my makeup this morning. I didn't even look at my scars. You know, I saw them, but I didn't see them. That's where I want to be, you know. And then when I go out to the shop or into town or go for a coffee and somebody looks differently at me or takes a double look or says something or worse, it reminds me that I'm different and I had forgot. I left it there. I let it breathe. I let my pain exist in the bright white light of that page. I didn't know what I'd been holding until I set it down and saw it staring back at me. Untangled, no longer caught in my throat, glistening words full of meaning. And I speak space carved out inside me now where this pain used to live, as it had quietly meshed itself deeper into my heart, laying down roots at the foundation of my self-esteem until my hate of myself suffocated any love that I could have felt for who I am, lost instead in the shattered dreams of who I never got to be. But reading those words, they felt harsh. Their sharp edges were cold. How could I hate you? For you were etched onto my skin, bearing witness to all I survived. You did not ask to be here any more than I asked to have you. I remember how we found each other, how you were scorched onto my body through pain that forged us together. Your curves and edges, textures and lines, they tell my story. Like art that is a painting of a moment, but a portrait of a lifetime. Capturing something infinite, illustrating the essence of what it is to exist.